Okay, it is November 7th, 2023 at about 12:19 p.m. and I am here interviewing Eva Sukiyashi for Rock Voices. Hello.
Hello.
Now to start off, could you tell me some biographical information like your name, your date of birth, where you're from originally, things like that?
My full name, official name in the US is Eva Tsukiyashi Dadesio. Dadesio is my husband's name. I was born in Peru from Asian, Japanese, in particular, Japanese parents. And I lived there. I lived in a farm with my parents for about 7 years, then 7 other years for primary school, then another 7 years for secondary school. And then I went to France, where I got 3 degrees in French literature. And the last one was the master's degree. It's the equivalent to American master's degrees. Then I came to America with my husband. He got a job in Minnesota, and so I went there and got, since it was difficult to find a job without a PhD, I decided to do the PhD at the University of Minnesota. So I finished the PhD, and then I decided to look for jobs. Slippery Rock was one of the options, you know, and so it was really, really the furthest east. That's what I was looking for, because Minnesota is wonderful, except that it's so freezing cold that it's not fun.
Yeah, that's fair. So, which degrees did you get in France again?
In France, it's the DEUG, which is translated to American General Studies in Literature, then La Licence, which is license, I suppose, but there's no equivalent in America. And then there is the master's degree in comparative literature. And then when I came to America, I did a PhD in at the University of Minnesota, and that was major in French and a minor in Spanish because I spoke Spanish. And so the interesting thing about me in relation to Slippery Rock is that I was the first person that was of so many different origins in the department. And it was quite an experience at the time, 1988. And you would think that life was, would have improved a lot, but not exactly.
How do you
It
mean? Meet...
was fine for me. But I would have wished for things to get much better for women and for diverse people, you know, of all kinds. And I mean, Slippery Rock hasn't done poorly, but it is a challenge just because of where Slippery Rock is located, you know. But given that, I think the university has done a good job at times, and at times I didn't know why things disappeared. And it was a challenge. Like when I arrived, there were programs where that brought European students to study at Slippery Rock, and it was wonderful because I could meet Swedish students and French and English, and they were all coming to study at Slippery Rock to get a BA degree. That was 1988, 89. Now they have disappeared. You know, that program disappeared. There are no, at least when I left in 2016, you know, there were programs for SRU students to go to other countries, but we didn't bring European students anymore. And I'm sure it was a question of money, but it would have been fun to continue that, you know, for students, like students learning French, have French students talk to them, or German, and, you know, all of that. So things have changed for the better, but in some areas, we still, you know, Slippery Rock still has a way to go. But it's the destiny of many colleges, you know, and so Sleepy Rock has done well regardless.
Yeah.
But I am supposed to talk about the good and the bad and the more of this, right?
True. Yeah, no, in the 2 years I've been here, I've known two European students, so there aren't none, but it's close. About your education, I've been reading like the old articles about you in the Rocket, and didn't you also get a computer engineering degree at some point, or computer science?
No, I got a computer certificate, coding certificate for COBOL.
Okay.
And then, so COBOL, it was used for payroll and that sort of thing. But I have a nice story about that one, the COBOL that I did. I did that at NYU, New York University. And so I went to Minnesota and applied for jobs with a certificate. And one company, which was a school, I shouldn't name it, so, but it was a school system that said, your degree, you have fantastic credentials. I just can't hire you because you're a woman. And the majority of you are going to supervise a whole bunch of men. And I thought, what's the problem? You know, I don't need to beat them. And so, well, it's just one of those things. Of things that happened in 1981 or two.
Mm-hmm. All right, and next question, your affiliation with SRU. So you said you were hired in 1988?
Yep.
Yeah, and what department were you hired into originally?
The Department of Modern Languages and Cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hired to teach French, but I also taught Spanish, so it was an advantage for the university.
By the time you were here, it was already a university, like it had transitioned out of being a state college and things like that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. And did the department you were hired into change while you were there? And if so, how?
Yes, it changed. I like the fact that I had so many French students. I got three at some time, at a point. And so I would use them to tutor my students, my American students, because they were native speakers. I loved that program. And then the person that created the program was called Konjorski was his last name, Konjorski. I can't remember his first name. But then he left, and then that program disappeared. You know, we used to have Swedish people. I had three Swedish students, female, and then one male student that ended up in MIT. But it was exciting, you know, it was just so fun. And then we had eight languages at one point, and then when the professors retired, like the German professor retired and the Italian professor retired, they were not replaced. We also had Russian. Russian disappeared as well. And so there was a big change. And so we tried to make it survive, but it was not only, it wasn't that Slippery Rock wasn't doing a good job. It is the general tendency in the area, you know, that Slippery Rock offered more languages than many other state schools, but there weren't that many students. Students were not interested. First, it was a requirement for the BA to have a language. And eventually, most students, only for the BA, so most students decided to go for a BS. And so the number of students in languages went down. And that was a pity, because I think students benefit from learning foreign languages. And then another big change in the department was when I became chair. I became chair of the department sometime in 2005, I think. And so I tried to keep it up, you know, to make it so that students would be interested. But if they were not required to take languages, they were not going to do it. Because if you come from Slippery Rock, you have very little connection with foreign students, with other languages also. So that was a pity. But there was also a program, I think there still is, ROTC. So there was, you know what ROTC is, right? It's, yeah. So that program required students to, well, it would be beneficial for them to learn Arabic. So I created the Arabic program. And so that was a success because it's still open today. Slippery Rock still offers Arabic. And then I also introduced TESOL. TESOL is teaching of English as a foreign language. So students would take courses to then offer language classes to foreigners in the US. So that was also another change. Then eventually I became dean because the provost asked me to become dean of the college. That was 2009. And I remember because my tenure as dean was almost exactly the two terms of Barack Obama. That was funny. Yeah, because I went in 2009 and I stopped at 2016. It was just the two terms of that president. So that was funny. And then with that, I just tried to make every department survive. The arts, I promoted the managerial side of the arts, because many times students who are art majors, when they graduate, they don't know what to do in terms of creating a business. And so I introduced I supported people who opened up and tried to create these programs in the different departments, you know, like theater, I think was one, and dance as well. A management program, the art department as well. So it was sort of a success, and I like that. And we did that in part with the support of President Philip Wei. Do you remember who he is?
I know he was an interim president for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's him. That's him. He was provost, and so when he was hired, one of the things he told me as he was being interviewed, he said, "You have a good program. Keep on doing the business in art." And so then he was hired, and so between the two of us, we created. You know, we worked on lots of projects, and I got along very well with him because he was British and I had a European education as well. And so we used to just, you know, fool around and have fun. But most Americans couldn't understand the humor because American humor is very different from British humor, I found out. So it was difficult. But he ended up president of a university in Alabama. So he did well too. Yeah, but I retired in 2009. Oh, no, 2016. Sorry, yeah, 2016.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the college that you were the dean of again?
The College of Humanities, Fine and Performing Arts, when I became dean. But eventually that didn't fit the department anymore because there were fields of study that weren't really the humanities or the performing arts, you know. So I proposed to change it to College of Liberal Arts. And in a way, it involves everything that is taught, you know, in the university. But there's always a fight with that, you know. People want to create their own college, you know. They say, we want, because there's more money that way, you know, like, give me all the money. Don't give it to that poor department that is so small, you know, but they don't realize you have to support the small departments as well, because you want quality education. You cannot only support the courses that are popular. You know, you need to support the courses that are useful for the students. Yeah, and so management is one of those. And there was one dean that once told me, I don't need to send my students to the philosophy department to teach ethics, because my professors can teach ethics. And I said, no, they cannot teach ethics, because ethics is a field of philosophy. And so we used to have, let's say, interesting discussions with some of my fellow deans.
All right, next question on the paper is just a quick one. What buildings did you work in over your time here?
Oh, okay. I began in Spots World Cultures Building, which I think somebody told me used to be a high school. Then we went to Carruth Riza Hall on the other side of campus. And then Strain Behavioral Building, I think it was called String. It's,
Behavioral Science Building.
The science building. Now it's called something else. Is because they have opened something with safety. I think it's a safety program in there.
Yeah, I'd have to double check on that.
Yeah, because I know that when I left, they had to change. The dean was changed to Spots. So I was the last dean in that building. It was really nice. I can't complain. It was a huge office. Yeah. I miss that sometimes. Not always, but it's fun to have a lot of space.
Yeah. And what about your first impressions of the university? Like, what was it like here when you arrived?
I was amazed at how insulated and how homogeneous the population was. I mean, no diversity. The diversity at the time was like, I was one of two Asians, probably. I was also one of three Hispanics. And African Americans, there were maybe two or three, I mean, through the entire university. And I knew a colleague who felt really offended. She was African American. And I thought, it's not worth it to get so mad. You just need to get better. Like, I mean, I don't know, you're a student, and that's why, can I say things that, well, it is interesting that, people. So I always told my students, don't get mad. You have to get even. So,
wait, what kind of things are you planning to say?
Oh, well, it's don't get mad to the point. So you can get mad, but many people go directly to the legal system and they go and sue the university, which I'm not against. I think it's important to sue universities when they misbehave. But it's, for me, I've gone through several cases where I've been discriminated against, and I could have sued, but for me it was a waste of time because I could make money doing something else. And that's why I did my PhD as well, because I thought, okay, I get my PhD and then I will be free to do more stuff. But the problem was, I got my PhD, and then the university where my husband was working he was an associate professor. And so they said, you don't need the permanent tenure position because your husband is here, and we will always give you something. And I said, I don't want always something. I want my own. And that's how I applied to many schools and decided to come to Slippery Rock. But the thing is, don't get mad. Figure out a way to get even. As a woman, as the diverse kind of person of any kind, you know, just It's not even not being even in terms of violence. No, it's just by your own efforts. Show them that you are better than what they think you are. You know, so yeah. So I've gone through a whole bunch of interesting diversity issues, but somehow none of that has hurt me. But in a way, I know why, because I am Asian, and being Asian, it's not as bad in American universities. Being Asian actually sometimes is a problem because people think that Asian people study too much. I mean, somebody actually told me, you shouldn't publish so much. And I said, why? Because you make us look bad.
Thanks.
That was interesting. Yeah. But this all was a sort of like joking, but it isn't a joke, really. It isn't a joke. You shouldn't let anybody do that to you.
All right. Now, since 1988, so like by the time you left, what changes had you witnessed, and were they for the better or the worse? Like you mentioned a few languages disappearing from the curriculum.
Yeah, the Korean and Chinese have disappeared, I think, after I left, and Japanese still strong, but it's a function of the person who teaches. Yukako is fantastic. She does a great job. You know her?
Yes.
She's fantastic. She just, so we, you need a person like that to guide, you know. So that was a big change. So your question was exactly
what changes have you witnessed? And I guess that could be in your department or the university in general. And were they for the better or the worse?
Okay. I was amazed at Dr. Ebersold. Dr. Ebersold was the first president I served for. So he was president when I was hired. He used to give me stomach ache, or I don't know, because he used to like to talk. When he talked with sports metaphors, because he was a PhD in physical education. And I know zero about any kind of sports, football, baseball, you name it. I don't know anything. I mean, I know a little bit about tennis, but that's it. And not even, you know. So I was not very impressed with a PhD in physical education. I couldn't fathom something like that, you know. But then he was president, and he surprised me, because he created an informal program that was Breakfast with the President. And I think all of the subject matters had to do with diversity, so with racism. And so he said we would have breakfast, especially new faculty, and just to talk about diversity issues. And so there was one person in the group I was in that said, I have never seen racism in Slippery Rock. And I thought, have you been living under a rock or what? You know, like, it's unthinkable, you know? And so, because I thought, I have, on a given week, I know about at least 5 people who have been insulted because they are African-American, you know? There are no Hispanics, so there was no such thing. They didn't discriminate against them. But it was really a wake-up call for me. And I couldn't tell, well, I told the people there, well, maybe your experience is different because you are white, you know? And so, but it was just a shocker for me. The faculty who said that there was no racism or no problems, discrimination, and the fact that the president had created programs to improve diversity issues on campus, and he was a PhD in physical education. So that was an education for me. I always appreciated Dr. Abersol because he did other things as well to bring Hispanic students to Slippery Rock, I think. He was really good. Then there was another president, I can't remember which one it was, that made an offensive comment of a hairdo of a faculty member, African-American, and he didn't realize it was offensive. And so the faculty member came to me and said, she was furious, you know, so, but it was the president. So what I were going to do, you know, I can't go to the president and say, hey, you're a racist pig or whatever. You can't do that. And so I said, well, wait. And so somehow I went to see the president and told him that it was not appropriate. And actually, he invited her to breakfast. They discussed the issue, and he was okay. The president was okay. So that's just two presidents of Slippery Rock. So we've had some good presidents, you know. And this president, there was also one president who hadn't traveled. The first time he's traveled out of the country was when he was president. I couldn't fathom that either. I mean, it was just unthinkable. Somebody who gets that far in life, it's incredible. How could that happen? But the same thing, this person got to travel a lot after that and created programs, you know. So Slippery was on a good path. Let's see, yeah. I think we've been lucky with the presidents. Dr. Norton was the first woman, and that was fantastic because it changed the way people do things and the perceptions, you know, in general. Yeah.
All right. And let's see. Next question is your campus activities, like committees and things that you were involved in.
It always comes stories. Okay. First committee that was really interesting for me was the grievance committee. And the head of the committee was, I think he was a philosophy chairperson. Somehow I think he was. But there were elected members, and I was the only woman in the group. So the grievance committee is for faculty to go and complain about what administration did or didn't do. So I remember, is this too much to tell? Well, I'll tell it anyways. What happened was that there were, like, I was the only woman. So there was a professor that was accused of sexual harassment. And so all these men in the committee were looking at me, you know, like, what do we do? Like I would know better what to do, you know, with sexual harassment and to defend the faculty member. And I said, no, because the student that is complaining is a student of mine in one of my classes. So I'm not going to defend the guy. And it was, but I had some experiences like that where they gave me the assignments that were problematic for them.
Mm.
There was less openness about, men were not as open as they are now. I mean, I know, I see young people your age, men, young people, I mean, young men who are not as, freaked out, let's say, about sexual harassment. They understand what sexual harassment is, and they know what to do, what is appropriate conduct and what isn't. Whereas in my days, sometimes the faculty didn't know any better either, you know, and so they committed crimes or offenses, and they couldn't figure out why they were being called. You know, they said, but I didn't do anything. And you had to explain, but yes, you did. You know, you can't say that. You can't do that, you know. So, but I stayed there for a while. And then, which other committee? I didn't do too many committees because I became chair. Oh, I think I went to a sabbatical committee. It was just very, nothing interesting. I mean, sabbaticals is for faculty to have a semester off. Then, yeah, basically I was chair and then I was dean. So I attended tons of committees, but because of my role as dean or as chair, yeah.
What about when you were only a professor? Did you advise any clubs or anything like that? Like help start any clubs?
Yes. When I was in French, I didn't create, but I supported the French program. And I created the study abroad program for France in Cannes. Cannes is a city in the south of France.
With the film festival, right?
Pardon?
With the film festival, right?
Exactly. That's it. And so I got some of my students to work for the film festival. They were elated because I knew the guy who was the director of the school, and he knew people in the festival. And so some of my students worked in the film festival. Yeah, that was fun. That was fun. What else did we do? Well, I created the Arabic program, the TESOL program. Yeah. And I did a bunch of things. I used to like to teach a lot, but I also like administration.
All right. What would you consider your accomplishments during your time at Slippery Rock?
Well, my accomplishments are the fact that I sort of saved all the different languages, as many as I could, but it was tough, you know. That's so, but Japanese is still there, so I'm happy about that. But I also am proud of my students. I mean, I've gotten key students to get, I don't know how what this is about me, but my biggest proud moments from my students is one student I helped to get the Rotary International Scholarship, which is $20,000. Well, at the time it was $20,000 to live in some place in the world. And so she went to Africa.
Wow.
And then another was when my first student got a PhD. I have a few students now with PhDs, but the first one is just like, wow, yes, he got a PhD. Then I'm also very proud of something I did with a student who had problems because her father was in jail and let him out. The police let him out of jail and he came back home, where he stole the money of this student. So she came to my office and she said, I'm quitting because I don't have any money. And I said, you're not gonna quit. So I made her write everything that her dad did and try to write about what solutions there are, but think about solutions. And I said, just now that you've done all that, try to do what you can now and leave me this text that you've written. So in the 4 years that she was at Slippery Rock, whenever she was like really freaking out, she would write, you know, all of the horrible things that were happening to her. And she had some horrible things happen to her because she had to take care of her sister's children because she didn't have any money nor a husband. So I made her go to France, and with a scholarship, of course. We got her a scholarship. And then she was really good in Canada school, at the international school. And so my friend, who's the director, I said, can you help her? And I told him the story. So he said, yes, I'm going to hire her for 6 months. So she worked in France for 6 months. And then today she is a civil servant. She makes good money. And I'm very proud of her. I mean, it's just like fantastic. And then the last one. I mean, my students are just fantastic, you know. So I'll tell you one more of my students. There was one student who made a ton of money when he was 17 years old, okay? So he didn't want to go to university, but his parents forced him. So his parents came to my office with him and they said, please, can you make him finish? And I said, I'll try. I'll do my best to help him. And so he hired half the students in his class to sell knives, kitchen knives.
Oh my gosh.
And so he made a lot of money. And so he didn't want to study because studying, he wasn't making any money. So anyway, he disappeared from school and all that. And then once I found him in Pittsburgh, in a Pittsburgh newspaper, I found his name. So I called him and I said, so did you graduate? He said, no. And so how much money do you think you can make without a degree? And he said, yeah, I need to finish that degree. Okay, I said, come over to my office and we'll look at your degree audit and we'll see what we can do. And so he came because he liked to take classes that he wanted, not what he needed, but what he wanted. So I said, we sat down, looked at everything he had done, and I said, okay, you are going to go to the professors that are teaching these courses and see if they can give you credit for the requirements, you know. So you do that with all of these courses and I will approve your graduation. Because he had 60 extra credits. You know, like you only need, how many credits do you need now?
120, I think.
120? Well, he had like 167 or some, because he just didn't pay any attention. You know, he just, and so I made him work with the professors. And there was only one professor that forced him to take one course to be able to graduate. And so he graduated. And now with his new BS degree, he got a job where he was a lot better paid, you know, because of that. And so eventually he made, but I told him when he did this, I said, you can't forget Slippery Rock University. You have to be thankful. And so he made a ton of money, obviously. And then he came to Slippery Rock and gave, I think it was something like $25,000 to the university, just as a thank you. And I thought, okay, this is good. And then he was selected alum of the year. There was some program, alumni of the year, and he was honored by the university because of his success. And of course, the money that he had given the university, you know. So, and this guy was British. His parents were British, but he's totally American because he was born here. But so those are some of my wonderful memories of my students. Faculty as well, they were fun. But, you know, the biggest satisfaction you get when you can push a student to their limits and then become what they can become, you know, so that's fantastic. Yeah.
And the next question sort of blends into the last one, your best and worst moments while you were teaching.
Okay, I'll tell you. While I was teaching, the worst and the best is the same thing probably. Okay, I came to America in 1980, and having studied in France, I mean, I have a European education, and they gave me a job teaching French 101, you know, just the basic courses. And so I was teaching, I was barely 30 years old, and I wore jeans so to class. And so when I gave the first quiz, you know, I started correcting the quizzes. They were awful. They were all really bad. And I had to give a D to every single one of them. I had 40 students in that class. And I gave everybody a D. And so I went to the chairperson and I told him, these students are making fun of me because I am short and I am, you know, and I am Asian. I don't know what, but they've done this just to bug me. And so he said, show me. And so I showed him the test. And what happened was he explained to me that in America, the level of education that you get, I mean, most everybody can go to college if you have the money. If you get the money, you can go to college. In a system like mine, where I came from, you pass tests and you have to be better than anybody else. And that's how you go from one level to the other. So you have to be the best of the best. And so that's what he understood, the chairperson. And he said, you're not teaching in Europe, you're teaching in America. So you have to adapt. And then I realized, it was a learning process. I had to figure out what is it that they could learn because what they expected to learn, you know. And so I adapted and I helped students understand. Well, but those students were scared to death of me after that. But I learned. So that was a really tough moment for teaching. For teaching, and what else did you say?
Best and worst moments. Also, was your worst there at Slippery Rock or somewhere else?
Somewhere else. Yeah, okay. It was in Minnesota, no. In Slippery Rock, my worst teaching moment, I haven't had a really bad teaching. I've had really good teaching moments, but not bad ones. I mean, I got the President's Award for teaching 1 year. So I'm very proud of that one because it's teaching. Even though I was an administrator, I am proud of what I did as a teacher.
All right. And the next question is, who are the leaders, like presidents, deans, et cetera, when you first came to campus, like the people who'd been there forever, the people who were really, making changes, and what were your impressions of them?
As I said, I was amazed at how little diversity there was, but I also noticed that the faculty, like the chairperson was, he taught Russian and German, and the professor in French as well, they were really passionate about the languages, and they were always in danger of disappearing. I always remember that they just, we were always like, on the verge of just being obliterated, you know. Everybody was scared to death that modern languages was gonna disappear. But they worked really hard to do the best they could. And they offered, there were some problematic areas for me, but I recognized that they were doing the best they could. And that's how the department survived as well. So, yeah.
What were the problematic areas?
The problematic areas were, like, faculty, it is, in my view, it's impossible not to be able to find a native speaker of Spanish or French in this country. It is, even then, but the department was entirely white, entirely white. And to me, it was just like, how did this happen? And so they would say to me, well, Foreign-born people don't like to work at Slippery Rock. And I'm thinking, so what am I? You know, like what toaster was, you know? But so they have these fixed ideas. But so Charles Tichy was really good. He convinced me to come to Slippery Rock because he showed me also the surrounding area. And I love the landscape of Western Pennsylvania. I think it's absolutely lovely. And Hannah Zinni, it was my colleague for my entire career there, was, was passionate about French. And she would go and bother anybody she could. She went to the provost, to the dean, to the president, just anybody to make sure that the program didn't disappear. It was to the point where she told me, we in French, we cannot take a sabbatical, because if we take a sabbatical, we won't be able to come back because there won't be courses to teach. And so I never took a sabbatical, but I still don't. I don't reproach that. You know, I think it's okay because she was trying to save the program. Yeah, so I like.
Sorry, were both of these colleagues in the modern languages program?
Yes. She, Hannah was in French and Charlie was German and Russian. Yeah, it was fun. It was a very nice person. I mean, really nice people in the department. With a little few problems, you know, but being who I am, it's normal that people do things that are insulting without meaning to be insulting, you know. So,
okay. What about other people who influenced you or were significant in your time here?
Other people. Oh, yes. Okay. So, William Williams, he is the reason why I was selected to be dean. I would have never thought that he would have chosen me because I used to fight with him. And we had these reading groups, you know, women's reading groups. And I used to just, you know, not be very nice to him. And so, but he liked to fight. He liked to fight for stuff like that. You know, like, you don't understand. Well, you don't understand, that sort of thing. And so it was no point getting mad at him because he was who he was. You know, it's just like he was, but he was very good at what he did. He did what he could. And then, the other president, Philip Way, I think that without him, the university wouldn't be where it is now. I think he helped a lot with his insistence on creating new programs. He really was key, I think. And but he wasn't always well, he wasn't always appreciated to his just value, you know, in my opinion. But of course other people have other opinions that they might be right too, but for me he was good.
What kind of programs did he create?
He, not in my college, he created programs in physical education or therapies, or, you know, so in things that were important for the university, where they could get students, you know, he was really good at recruiting. He traveled the world to recruit students, foreign students to Slippery Rock. And I traveled with him, you know, quite a bit. Yeah. Philip Way, and then who else? There might be some that I'm forgetting, but it's more or less.
All right, that's all right. Now, next question is, major events or activities while you were here, like academic events, cultural building projects, like how the campus changed, national events, things like that? It's a pretty broad question.
Yeah. Well, Miller Auditorium was the never-ending project.
Mm.
I mean, when I came in, Nora Ambrosio had started the program. She just went and convinced everybody. She was a force of nature. And she just retired also this year.
I've interviewed her.
Oh, you did?
She's, yeah, she's great.
Yes, but she's a force of nature, you know, right? So she just worked at it, you know, just she wouldn't relent. She was just, somebody said no, and she said, okay, how can I make it say yes? And then no, okay, there must be another way. She always was finding ways. She was just incredible. Yeah, and she wanted to hold on to being chair, didn't let anybody else be chair. And I thought, that's not good. She has to let other people lead as well. Anyway, so, oh yes, I'm very proud of somebody, Ursula Payne. Ursula Payne is from the dance department. I supported her. I supported her a lot. I thought that she had the qualities to be a good administrator. And now she's an associate provost. So I'm very proud of her. And then a horrible thing that happened was September 11. I was there. I don't know if it is important for the university, but it was important for the university because I was teaching a class and I knew, I was noticing that one of my students were there sitting and everybody was quiet. But then I noticed that this student, her father worked in a place that was close to the where the plane landed in Pennsylvania. You remember? Yes.
Yeah.
So she was just like, she was like not there. She was there, but without being there. And so I said, "So your dad works there, right?" And she goes, "Yes." And so I said, okay, go and call your family, call somebody. And so she just went, like just doing what people tell her to do. She was just not computing, you know. And so she, after a few minutes, she came back and she said, my dad is safe. So he wasn't, yeah, that was all horrible. And then I realized that I have a sister whose husband worked in the building in the two towers. But that day, the train was delayed. And so when he should have been underneath the towers, when the first plane hit, he should have been there. But since he was late, he was safe. In the middle of the road, I mean, in the middle of the train path. So he was safe. And yeah, all that happened. And then I went to the chairperson of the department. And I said, I'm sorry, I just realized I need to find out where my sister is. And so everybody was just like going crazy. So the president somehow got us, I don't know how I knew it, but the president said, you teach if you want to, or you just go home, send students home. And I thought I would leave my students decide. So either you go if you want to, or you stay if you want to. And then I had to go and check my sister and her husband because he worked in New York. And so the worst was when we couldn't find his family in Peru because the phone system had collapsed worldwide. So nobody could do that. But I, like, as you pointed out, or maybe not, I like technology, and so I had a chat room with my nephew, with one of my nephews. So I chatted and he answered. And so you could chat, but you couldn't call on the phone. And so that's how his family found out that he was safe, because they thought he would be right under the rubble, you know. Yeah, so that those were events of 2001, but not exactly related to Slippery Rock, but yes, because I worked there.
Yeah, no, one of the other professors had a really interesting story about 9/11 that was sort of, it was pretty similar to what you described, just like the students, the effect on the students.
Yeah.
What about how the campus changed in terms of like buildings?
Ah, yes. You asked me that before. The buildings, well, the Miller Auditorium, the never-ending project that just ended this past year, I think.
I think it ended the summer before I started college.
Oh, so it was done 2018?
2021, I think.
2021, oh, okay. Well, that was the never-ending story. The other buildings were the PT building, and the art building was also remodeled, and the Moldy also was redone, I think. And of course, Caruth Risa Hall. That wasn't called Caruth Risa Hall. It was called Caruth Risa Hall because she gave tons of money to the university. And yeah, so those were the buildings. Which other buildings? Yeah, the art department had a lot of updates. Then there was, but this is, I don't know, because I'm really terrible with sports, but apparently there was a baseball field that was created while I was there, but I didn't pay any attention to it. But apparently it was a big thing because the donors were alumni. I think it was that, something like that. So, but you have to get the right information from people who know about this. I just remember vaguely. Yeah.
All right. And other memorable events or memories?
Memorable events. Oh, yes. It was something that was really, and I can't remember exactly what year it was. But there was a cross burning in, what is that part of the school? There was a cross burning in one of the student dorms. Not student, well, yeah, student dorms. And it got so bad, it got on CNN. CNN informed the entire country that Slippery Rock was a racist town and was, you know, it was scary to me because it was just too much exposure. And then I started listening about other, you know, when people find out about something horrible, then they come up with all sorts of stories. And so I did hear a lot. That's how I found out that the Ku Klux Klan has a branch in Butler and Youngstown. I don't know, but those are things that I used to hear in those days. Maybe they still exist, but I don't know. So other memorable things is that I think that the last year I was there, this didn't happen, but for Halloween, they used to hang a semblance of a man with a black face in one of the Route 8, the route that goes from Slippery Rock to Butler. But I think that they finally, somebody convinced that family that it was not cool to do a hang. But I also remember when I first got to Slippery Rock, somebody told me, if you have car trouble in this part of the road, do not get out of the car. just, you know, put their lights on, you know, the blinking lights, and just wait for police or somebody to come. No, don't get out of the car. I've never had a problem, but it gives you an idea of how things were in those days, because I'm talking to you about 1988, 89. Hopefully, and that was the time of the cross burning and all that. So, yeah. Hopefully that has changed.
I hope so. Yeah. I haven't heard about anything like that. What, if anything, do you miss about being at SRU?
The students, yeah. Because the students are so, yeah, they bring you the future. You know what's going on. Like, I love to be with students who know a lot about technology, because that's how the way I learn. They learn so quickly, but at my age, you don't, but I like it. So I use my nephews, I use all my students in Slippery Rock. I always had a student come and help me with technology, yeah.
All right. And last question is words of wisdom. Second to last question. How would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to remember? As the administrator, I did what I could to make the lives of students the best they could have it. Yeah. As someone who helped everybody to be the best they could be. Yeah.
All right. And then last question, words of wisdom or other things you would like current or future Rock community members to know?
Could you say the question again?
Words of wisdom. So other things you'd like for current or future community members to know?
I am not that wise, so I think just your best. Yeah, I figure the best is just people have to try to get the best of themselves. Yeah, don't doubt yourself. Just go ahead. Don't get mad. I suppose that's my one.
Yeah.
Don't get mad. Get even. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much for making the time to talk to me. This was great.
No problem. So how long did we take? Over an hour?
Just over an hour.